Truth Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for joining us for part of your evening. The Republicans are having their Florida debate now. So if you want to turn on NBC or MSNBC, I guess, while you're listening to the good stuff on this program, and watch that for comic relief. Go ahead. Monkey Man got more tax cuts today. We'll have a couple of quick moron sounds to share tonight from his press briefing today, his little screed economic stimulus plan. Oh, my God. Throw the idiot $600. Here, throw him some money. Here you go, boys. This reminds me a little bit of who was it? John D. Rockefeller during the Depression used to walk down the street and hand people dimes. Here you go. Here's $600. Now go buy something, you dumbass Americans. It's not that the entire business, investment, financial infrastructure of this country is rotten to the core. That has nothing to do with it. It's not that I have driven this as president. I've driven this nation into trillions of dollars of debt. No. Here's $600. Go, I don't know. Go to Disney World. I mean, the condescension in that, the patronizing attitude. And, of course, the Democrats are going right along with it. You know, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Anyway, we'll have some moron sounds for you tonight where he announced this wondrous plan. Dennis Kucinich is out. He will make an official announcement tomorrow. We'll have a little bit on that for you, too. And finally, Democratic congressional candidate from Michigan, Nancy Skinner, who is running once again against Joe Nolenberg in Michigan's 9th District. She almost handed him his ass last time, but she's running again, and we'll have her on. She's going to join us. She's running without the blessings of the filthy Democratic Leadership Conference, or whatever it's called, the DLC, you know, the establishment Democrats. So, therefore, she has to find money any place she can get it, since the Democratic Party will not back her, which I don't understand. She came very close to beating a 7-8-term right-wing neo-Nazi member of the House from Michigan. For Christ's sake, Michigan? Michigan wants more Republicans? Really? Okay. Anyway, we'll have Nancy on. Okay. All in all, a fun-filled evening. Kay in San Francisco writes, Mike and Kathy, I loved hearing the letter on last night's program from your listener who lost 40 pounds by running on the treadmill while listening to you. He's not alone. When I head out for my morning run, I almost always do so with a podcast with prior evening's Malloy program. The quintessential Malloy rages have gotten me up a lot of hills here in the city, and I'm sure you know how steep those are. On Saturdays, when I do my longer runs in Golden Gate Park, I will usually get through an entire program. The only time it's a problem is when you make me laugh so hard I have to stop and catch my breath, as in, I'm coming to you! You guys are great company, Kay in San Francisco. We ought to get a copyright on this real quick, Kathy. Try to make some damn money. The Mike Malloy weight reduction plan, right? It's colder than hell here tonight again. So I've got a brimming cup full of superbeans.com coffee. Thanks to Bob Alexander, who imports this stuff. Kona Coffee. Wow. Hold on just a minute. What? You don't know what I'm talking about? Superbeans.com. Check him out. Yeah, they advertise on the program, but he also emails a lot. I read a lot of his emails, and his coffee is wonderful. So, Canada says it's not going to attend a conference in Durban, South Africa in 2009, next year, a conference on racism because the Canadian government has decided it's just going to be the same old trash about how Israel treats the Palestinians in a racist manner. So Canada's not going to take part. A top official of Canada said, nope, we're not going to go because the event is likely to descend into, quote, regrettable anti-Semitism, end quote. You know, I'm so sick of this. I really am. I really am. It is not anti-Semitism to criticize murderous policies by a government that happens to be Jewish. If that's the case, and I believe, I don't know how orthodox or how observant the Jews are who run the government of Israel since 1948. I have no idea. I really don't know what their religion. I just know that the country was established on top of Palestine as a Jewish state. So any criticism you see, this is what it's come down to. I thought we were the only ones in this country, but apparently Canadians deal with the same thing. Any criticism of the policies of Israel are immediately or is immediately labeled anti-Semitism. You rotten bastards. Well, what a nasty trick to do. So if I criticize the policies of Ireland, I'm an anti-Catholicism. Is that right? If I criticize the policies of Saudi Arabia, it's anti-Islam, right? This infuriates me. It really does. But anyway, Canada has jumped on the bandwagon. Officials in Canada say they believe their country is the first to announce it will not attend the conference in Durban, South Africa. A similar meeting at the same venue in 2001 was marred when Israel and the United States walked out in protest over draft conference texts branding Israel as a racist and apartheid state, language that was later dropped. It is racist. It is apartheid. That is what it has to do to survive, it thinks. But you see, we're not allowed to tell the truth. Dennis Kucinich is not allowed to show up on the floor of the House and use the word lie where it pertains to these bastards in the Bush crime family. If he does, Nancy Pelosi or whoever's in charge of the House on that particular day will say, Mr. Kucinich, you're going to have to retract that. We don't allow that kind of language in here. Not allowed to call what Israel is doing to the Palestinians apartheid. What the hell would you call it? Somebody send me an email. What do you call the policies against the Palestinians, if not apartheid? What do you call it? Oh, boy. I opened myself up for that, didn't I? The foreign minister, whom we mentioned last night, Maxime Bernier, said, quote, we had hoped that the preparatory process for the 2009 conference would remedy the mistakes of the past. Despite our efforts, we have concluded that it will not. Canada will therefore not participate. Remedy the mistakes of the past. What? Pass a pre-conference resolution that says, thou shalt not criticize the policies of the State of Israel against the Palestinian people under any conditions. If you do, you're an anti-Semitic, Jew-hating bastard. So you will suck up whatever Israel does and shut up. Oh. Jason Kenney, the Secretary of State in Canada for Multiculturalism, said that country's conservative government was sure the conference would, quote, showcase the same regrettable anti-Semitism as the 2000 meeting, unquote. He went on to say, quote, our government sees no value in allowing Canada's participation to continue to dignify or legitimate such hateful and un-Canadian propaganda, end quote. Hateful? Un-Canadian? What is not hateful? Is anybody in the Canadian government taking a look at the Palestinians like starving, I don't know, starving animals ripping down a wall, by the way, that was built by the Israelis that separates Gaza from Egypt, ripping down a wall, whoring into Egypt to do what? Go gambling? Sleep with whores? No, to get food and medical supplies. What do you call that, Canada government? What do you call that? B'nai B'rith Canada praised Ottawa for pulling out of a farce of a conference that it said pays lip service to anti-racism, but in fact provides a platform for the promotion of hatred and bigotry. Oh, my God.
Gaze at your daughters and gaze at your sons. Ask yourself this question over again. Would you be perfectly happy if it happened to them? If you're perfectly comfortable, come into our friends.
So I've submitted a plan that not only reduces the rate at the bottom, but raises the top rate as well.
What? Regarding the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Palestine, I can't help but wonder, at least, 30 or 40 times a decade, where the U.S. would be right now, just the U.S., I'm not talking about Israel, I'm not talking about Russia, where would the U.S. be, globally speaking, if we had had a more even-handed policy where it concerns the Israelis and the Palestinians? Where would the U.S. be? I don't think we would be at war with the Muslims, do you think? I don't know. 2020 hindsight, it's just a parlor game. But I often think about that. Like I say, at least 10 or 15 times a decade, since this has been going on now for, 6 decades, just where would the United States be vis-a-vis its foreign policy, its energy policy, its respect globally, its difficulties with other nations, if we had been more even-handed? I'm not talking about being one-sided the way we've been with the Israelis. We've been totally one-sided. We have never, ever, 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 ever stood up for the Palestinians. Not once. I don't care what Carter or Clinton or Bush or any of these presidents have said. This has been a scam and nonsense. All of it has been. Oh, well, sure. We got the Egyptians, or Carter did, got the Egyptians and the Israelis to stop their nonsense. And what has that cost us so far? I'm afraid to even ask, because we bought off both countries. That's all. There was no agreement there. It was here, we'll give the Egyptians this and the Israelis that. So for like 20 years, the biggest recipients of U.S. foreign aid have been Egypt and Israel, period. End of story. So it was a buy-off. What happens if the money stops? You got to be kidding. I just wonder sometimes, that's all. Mark in San Francisco writes, Mike, I'm a founding member of Nova N, an avid listener. I, too, have my upbringing haunting me as I see the pictures of Palestinian refugees. I was raised in a synagogue of survivors. My best friends were children of survivors. And my adult role models came to this country to start their life again after surviving together in the camps. When I hear you make the parallel between Warsaw and Gaza, every fiber in my body wants to shout that you're an anti-Semite. But that is only my upbringing. My rational thinking mind and my heart know that not only are you not anti-Semitic, but that you're a caring, civilized, right-minded human being. I'm sometimes paralyzed by this dilemma. I know that what the Israeli thugs are perpetrating is wrong. But I also know they're my brothers and sisters in my spiritual homeland. My rational mind also knows that, at the furthest, the Palestinians are my stepbrothers and sisters, and they are being completely mistreated. It feels to me as if I am watching my parent beat my brother. How am I supposed to behave? And every time that I hear Israeli government claims that Gazans should stop Hamas terrorists, I think of myself unable to stop Bush's terrorism. Paralyzed all around. So, Mike, please don't stop. Draw the parallels. The oppressed has become the oppressor, but for me it is happening in my immediate family. And you make me break down and cry in frustration and sadness at the situation. Keep calling it as it is. At the very least, you're saying it for me, one who is so torn. Sincerely, Mark, and his last name in San Francisco. Yeah, I hate the topic. I hate to see it. I hate to see all of it. I hate to see all of it. And again, I don't care if it's a bus being blown to pieces in Haifa full of Jewish elementary students, or a school being blown to pieces in one of the so-called refugee camps in the territories, occupied territories, with children being blown to pieces. I hate it. Terry and Sadler writes, on last night's show, you wondered why Egypt would build the wall between Gaza and Egypt. Well, they didn't. Israel did, for the obvious reason, to put, quote, the others, unquote, the unbelievers, into a concentration camp. Well, okay. And as you know, Kucinich has dropped his presidential bid. He will make a news an announcement tomorrow, a news conference in Cleveland. He says he will explain his, quote, transition, end quote, tomorrow. He said, I want to continue to serve in Congress. He also said he will not endorse another Democrat in the primary. So Ralph Lopez, writing at Daily Coast, has an idea. He says Dennis Kucinich will introduce articles of impeachment against Bush this Monday, January 28th. That's Monday coming. The same day of Bush's State of the Union speech. The media are trying to ignore it to the best of their ability. So I've made it easy for the Netroots to write to many major media outlets at once so we can swamp them with letters and messages asking them to cover impeachment. This experiment in the Netroots pushing it down to the major media will send the message that we are paying close attention to the fact the mainstream media is not doing their job. We were alerted to this when Kucinich gave his historic speech on November 6th, calling for the impeachment of Cheney, and there was a deafening silence from all but the internet media. What Ralph Lopez is asking is for letters, emails. Write the best letter you can, send it to all the listed media, something with multiple addresses. The multiple addresses feature of email makes it easy. And there's a list of media. You can get it at Daily Coast, or you can go to, you can find it at Wikipedia, or you can find it at Fair Media, if you Google that. Fair Media, F-A-I-R, and then the word media. Google it, and you'll get a list, and it's a good idea. We'll be right back.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Was that not clear? What I said was, if you want to get a list of media that you can respond to, Google two words, Fair Media. That's all. Somebody wrote to me and said I came up with a German website. I didn't give you a website. Or you can go to fair.org. You know, whatever you want to do. But just Google Fair Media, and you'll get a list. What Ralph Lopez is suggesting at Daily Coast, his diary entry, I believe it was today, is to flood mainstream media with letters of support regarding Kucinich's articles of impeachment that will be introduced in about 4 days in the U.S. House. We mentioned this last night. There are 50 articles of impeachment. Jesus, God. It's going to take a while, right? Impeachment, according to the diarist at Daily Coast, impeachment is on the lips of 54% of Americans in the case of Cheney, 45% in the case of Bush. It's a dam ready to burst. He writes, perhaps never in American history has the true sentiment of the country been as removed from the blatherings in Congress as the earth is from the moon. Kucinich is going out a limb on Monday, as he did last November, as Representative Wexler did earlier this month. And Lopez writes, it's up to us to do everything we can to support these efforts with everything we've got. We can't leave Kucinich hanging. We got 3 days to make ourselves heard. Write early, write often. These email addresses are all publicly available online at Wikipedia listings of media, so this is not spamming. is using the power of the internet to achieve the breakthrough for democracy that this country so badly needs. So it's up to you to find the media list. I know you can. When the person sent this to me, it came with a media list with about probably 100 different media contacts, everybody from New York Times to Arizona Republic. But you can do it, too. It's a good idea. I watched Charlie Gibson on ABC News tonight, don't ask me why, talking about Dennis Kucinich is going to announce his retirement from the presidential contest tomorrow. I think Gibson gave all of 20 seconds to that announcement, not a single word, nothing about what Kucinich is going to do Monday. Nothing. So that's the way it's going to be. And this is the thing I don't get. I don't understand. Well, I do understand. What am I saying I don't understand? Corporate America would back Hitler. Well, did back Hitler. I mean, my God, back in the 30s, corporate America was firmly behind Hitler. Corporate America will not change. It will never change. It is anti-life. It's anti-family. It's anti-American. It's anti-everything. So why should corporate America at this stage point out the fact that George W. Bush and his regime lied us into a war 935 times? It's documented now. Why does mainstream media utterly and absolutely refuse to question what happened in this country on September 11, 2001? Oh, hell, you know why. Jen writes, Mike, I just had to vent, but when did the word lie and all in all its forms basically become the new F word in this country? This makes no sense that Pelosi and the Democrats are doing this. What Jen's referring to, of course, is forcing Kucinich to modify his comments the other day. Jen writes, you know, if lies has become the new F word, then all these fundies better rewrite the commandments so that only 9 are bad. Huh? I don't know what you're saying there, Jen. She says, I don't know how much more I can take of all this, especially now that the only man worthy of running for president that actually ran is basically throwing in the towel. Thank you, Mr. Kucinich, for trying to protect me and millions of others like me who are too dumb to realize what a good president you would be. Yeah, we're not allowed. Nobody's allowed to say. They're allowed to say, I guess, in polite company. There was a time when you couldn't say pregnant in mixed company. I can remember television. I remember the Lucy show. I love Lucy. When I was a kid. And she was big and pregnant with Ricky. Little Ricky, Kathy says. Little Ricky. And the word pregnant was never mentioned. You couldn't say pregnant. Now you can't say lie. You can't say on mainstream media that George Bush and Dick Cheney and the rest of these bastards are liars. Just flat-out liars without somebody. That's like you can't say that the policies of Israel are racist and constitute apartheid against the Palestinians. You can't say it. You can't say the word lie. Documented proof, 935 lies to take us into a war, and you can't say the word lie. What the hell? I'm going to start saying some words you're not supposed to say. And then I'll see you in my next job. Let's do this Bush crap real quick. Prairie 2 writes, regarding this disgusting handout that the Bush crime family and these filthy Democrats have come up with. Yeah, you're going to get $600. And you're supposed to run out and go spend it at Target or something. Anyway, Prairie 2 writes, hey, Mike, the 3 million manufacturing jobs lost under the Bush crime family reign of terror would be generating $150 billion in payroll and another $600 billion in economic multiplier. That would cover the balance of trade deficit without including the white-collar jobs outsourced to India. The $150 billion in economic stimulus would just drain down the Walmart rat hole to China and come back here from their sovereign wealth fund to buy our infrastructure. Why, of course. Here, wage earner, let me see what you're facing here. You lost your job. You went from a $26 an hour manufacturing job down to $8 an hour as a greeter at Walmart. You're about to lose your house. The finance industry really puts you in the trick bag. Oh, here, you know, we'll give you this this rate to begin with, and 5 years from now when the rate changes, don't worry about it. You can't afford to put your kids in college. You don't know what the hell you're going to do about your car payments. Here, dumbass, here's $600. Whee! So here's Chucklenuts on the bipartisan economic growth agreement. Don't you love that? Sort of summarize, House leaders, Democrats and Republicans, and the Bush crime family announced this agreement, roughly $150 billion, that would pay stipends $300 to $1,200 per family, and more for families with children, plus provide tax incentives for businesses to encourage spending. Businesses! What are the businesses going to do? Build more factories in Thailand! I have an idea. End the war and save $2 billion a week. Here's Chucklenuts.
This morning, my administration reached an agreement with Speaker Pelosi and Minority Leader Boehner on an economic growth package. This package has the right set of policies and is the right size.
Yeah.
The incentives in this package will lead to higher consumer spending and increased business investment this year.
That's what we need, more spending.
Importantly, this package recognizes that lowering taxes is a powerful and efficient way to help consumers and businesses.
Oh, my God.
I've always believed that allowing people to keep more of their own money and to use it as they see fit is the best way to help our economy grow.
Like war?
I'm also pleased that this agreement does not include any tax increases, as well as unnecessary spending projects that would have little immediate impact on our economy.
But Chucklenuts, if nobody gets any money until this summer, sometime in May, June, because the IRS is occupied with the business of tax year 2007, then how does this package immediately help the economy? Well, it doesn't. It doesn't do anything. You know what it does do? You know what this is designed to do? Is to get you, Truth Seeker, and me to shut up. Sit down here. Here's some money. Go sit. Now shut up. Go buy some string and play with it. Bush, the delusional, dry drunk, now tries to explain how his same old plan is going to save the global economy. Listen to this.
I know Americans are concerned about our economic future. Our economy is structurally sound, but it is dealing with short-term disruptions in the housing market and the impact of higher energy prices.
Oh, is that all?
These challenges are slowing growth.
Oh, really?
Yet Americans can also be confident about our long-term outlook.
And how's that?
Our economy is strong, it is dynamic, and it is resilient.
Up until you.
It has led the world for many decades.
Up until you.
And with the right policies in place, including the extension of the tax cuts passed in 2001 and 2003 that have helped our economy, I firmly believe we're going to continue to lead the world.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Okay, Chucklenuts, we got you covered, yeah. Yeah, extend those tax cuts to the 0.1% of the wealthiest people in the United States. That'll help.
Yeah, that'll help.
All right, is that enough? Do you have any more of that garbage? Is that it? Just those two? Thank you. Jesus, the last voice I want to hear right now is this freak. Especially about economic stimulus plan? Are you kidding me? Toss a handful of nickels and dimes to the unwashed masses in this country who are trying to make ends meet? I watched Morning Joe on MSNBC, and I just wonder how much longer Mika Brzezinski is going to put up with this asswipe that she has to share the camera with, Joe Scarborough. But Scarborough said this morning, what? What recession? What's anybody talking? There's no recession. Not for you, Scarborough, you pig bastard. You're doing just fine, aren't you? And Mika Brzezinski sits there and kind of shakes her head and looks off into the middle distance, and you can just see her thinking, Jesus, I think I'll check out CNN. Maybe they have a job opening.
Math sucks. Math sucks. Math sucks. I'd like to burn this textbook. I hate this stuff so much. Math sucks. Math sucks. Sometimes I think that I don't know that much.
that jobs are the most important part of one of my jobs. How do we encourage people to hire more people?
Ten before the hour, Kathy writes, one of the best ways to encourage consumer spending would be to extend unemployment compensation benefits. Those folks will spend whatever they get because they have to, and that was taken out of the bill. Yeah, no, that would never happen. I can remember not that long ago, when Kathy and I were waiting for Molly to be born. Kathy was, how pregnant were you? About 5-6 months pregnant? We started drawing unemployment. You were 4 months pregnant. Kathy was 4 months pregnant. This Kathy, the email's from Kathy in Green Bay. My Kathy, this Kathy, was 4 months pregnant with Molly, and IE America, the network I worked for before Air America, went out of business, and they just folded up. So we immediately started drawing unemployment, and we both got $300 a week? Is that what it was? Yeah, we both got $300. Yeah, we were both working for IE America, that's right. So the maximum, I believe, here in Georgia at the time, is probably still is, was about $300 a week. So Kathy and I got $600 a week unemployment, and for like how many months did we live off that? For about four months, because we didn't go to work for Air America until Molly was 6 days old. So it was about 5 months, and we were reaching the limit. Now, also living on savings, what savings we had. But I can remember there was hesitation on part of Air America about hiring us. I don't know why, but we were thinking, well, we've got a month to go because you only get unemployment benefits here in Georgia for 6 months, and the state is under the control of the Republican neo-Nazis now. So if you're unemployed in Georgia, you got 6 months, boobala, and if you don't get it together in 6 months, screw you. You know, you lose your house, you lose your car, you lose your job, you lose everything. That just, you know, that's the way it goes in capitalism. There has to be a vast pool of unemployed people in order to depress wages. It has to be that way in capitalism. Full employment means 4.5% unemployed. If you have a workforce of 100 million people, that means there always has to be 500,000 people without jobs. And multiply that times their spouses and their children. You see, the capitalism is a predatory, anti-family, murderous enterprise at best. When it really gets nasty, it can destroy everything. And don't talk to me about, oh, well, you know, the people that took the adjustable rate mortgages or this or that, they should have known better. Oh, get out of here with that argument. That's such a specious argument. But anyway, what I was trying to say was the unemployment comp that and the reason they don't want unemployment extensions is because that's not tax money. That doesn't come from the worker. That comes from the employer. That comes from corporate America. Oh, no. They don't want to play. Oh, screw the worker. We want the rat bastard to be unemployed so we can hire him or her for $6.50 an hour. Don't make me mad. So, of course, unemployment extensions were taken out of this economic stimulus bill. Here's $600, half-ass. Now go buy something. Go buy some of that stuff made in China that corporate America decided, you know, where corporate America decided, well, let's open factories over there. We'll make the same crap, but we don't have to pay American workers. Here's $600. What? You got 3 kids? Okay, here's $900 for you. Well, you have 5 kids? Okay, here's $1,200 for you. Now, sit down and shut up. There's your economic stimulus. Now, go spend it. Go spend it, dumbass. Don't use it to pay your bills. Don't save it. Nah. Go spend it. Well, here's an idea. This comes from Margaret in Dallas. She says, donate your check. She says, I'm going on record. If this does pass, and apparently it has, Margaret, I will be donating my rebate check that Bush and House leaders have agreed upon. I'm hoping fellow listeners might do the same. Perhaps you could spearhead this using your show and passion. Passion? Moi? My idea is that we all pool our checks and donate to a good cause, perhaps to a food stamp or unemployment program, since the Democrats seem so ready to abandon these programs in favor of this misguided stimulus package being offered. Or better yet, we could donate to a veterans group, since it's because of the war in Iraq being fought by these poor souls that the president has bankrupted our economy. I fail to see, Margaret writes, how an extra $600 in certain people's pockets will do much good. Do they truly think that another TV set in everyone's home or shopping spree will stimulate the economy? Will $600 cover a mortgage payment? Will $600 alleviate the interest on student loans people with degrees cannot afford to repay? Will $600 cover a family which needs health insurance? Oh, and besides, the $600 won't arrive until the middle of the year, apparently. Give them a fish or teach them to fish. Fix the economy. Prioritize spending. Don't buy us by flashing cash in our faces. And for the folks who desperately need an extra $600, I'm sorry. I wish our economy was better suited to your needs and our compassionate lawmakers really had your best interests in mind when voting for this stimulus package. Margaret in Dallas. Yeah, your heart's in the right place, Margaret, but you and I both know that we can't do a damn thing about food stamps or unemployment comp or veterans groups or there's nothing we can do except to sit back and let these rat bastard Democrats and Republicans toss what is becoming increasingly, if not desperate, certainly a concerned American wage earner, $600. How insulting is that? How insulting is that? And the sad fact is there are so many families who are going to have to take it. They're going to have to take it. Instead of taking the check, the government check, and smearing something on it that's not pleasant and mailing it back, no. They're going to have to take it. What a smash in the face. What a kick in the guts after the financial industry, the banking industry, the mortgage industry in this country has absolutely gutted all of us. Once again, it was the SNLs, it's the mortgage industry, it's the arbitragers, it's the hedge fund operators. Hey, huh? Screw you, Mr. and Mrs. America! I just bought a $25 million apartment on the Upper East Side of New York. Nyeh, 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 nyeh. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Thank you for sticking around. About an hour ago, the New York Times editorial board endorsed Hillary Rodham Clinton for the Democratic nomination for president and John McCain for the Republican nomination for president. Thanks to Sheila for sending that in. Boy, that's a surprise, right? One more thing here on the economic stimulus plan, and then we're going to come to your phone calls for a while. This is from Sanchez in California. In regards to the bipartisan economic stimulus package, I love the title of some of these bills, don't you? The bipartisan economic stimulus package you are currently discussing. This is exactly how I feel about it. Remember the 60s and 70s classic Laugh-In? Remember the opening segment? Every week, all the regular cast members, Ruth Buzzi, Artie Johnson, Judy Carn, etc., would flash across the screen sitting behind the psychedelic Laugh-In wall. Remember Alan Seuss? Remember how when the camera flashed to him, he would always roll his eyes and throw a bunch of confetti in the air? Whoopee! If they're throwing us a bone, Mike, they'll have to do better than that. Have you seen the price of quiche lately? No. Laughing. That's from a different planet. Let's do some phone calls here very quickly. Jennifer is calling for from Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, Mike. Long time listener, first time caller.
Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Hey, I was listening to a radio show today on AlCube, and they brought this up for a totally different reason, but I thought, that's interesting. There is a reverend, his name is Reverend Caldwell, and he is said to be Bush's spiritual advisor.
His what?
His spiritual advisor.
Spiritual advisor, okay.
And he was present at, what was it called? He was present at the Donnie McClurkin event. And he was campaigning and everything for Barack Obama.
No, you kind of lost me here. Bush has a spiritual advisor. He's a preacher from where, in Texas or something? And he was at a Barack Obama rally? What now?
Yes. It was called the Donnie McClurkin event. And it was basically an event for Barack Obama. And he was openly, and he had told his congregation and everything that he was going to back Obama.
All right, well, what does that mean to you?
To me, I've always been looking for some kind of connection. Because in my mind, the Republicans are going to back him, at least some of them, because they think that's who they can beat.
I see.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I've always been waiting for a connection.
For what?
I knew that for a connection. Because I knew there had to be. Just in my mind.
So this does it for you as far as the connection between Republicans and the Obama campaign, in order to not that Obama seeks them necessarily, but in order to destroy his candidacy, is what you're saying.
Right. That's what I think.
Yeah. Well, that's a distinct possibility, Jennifer, because the Republicans are filthy, filthy dogs, and I would not be surprised a move like that. Jennifer, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Well, and by the way, before we go to the next call here, Michael in Harrisburg sent this to me. This Sunday on 60 Minutes, the guest will be George Piro, P-I-R-O. He was the FBI agent assigned to interrogate Saddam Hussein after his capture. Piro is a Lebanese-American, one of the few FBI agents who spoke Arabic. Well, it turns out, this is what CBS says, Saddam Hussein initially didn't think the U.S. would invade Iraq to destroy weapons of mass destruction. So he kept the fact that he had none a secret to prevent an Iranian invasion that he believed was going to happen. The Iraqi dictator revealed this thinking to George Piro, the FBI agent assigned to interrogate him after his capture. Piro, in his first television interview, relays this and other revelations to 60 Minutes correspondent Scott Pelley this Sunday, January 27th. Piro spent almost 7 months debriefing Saddam in a plan based on winning Saddam's confidence by convincing him that Piro was an important envoy who answered only to President Bush. This, and being Saddam's sole provider of items like writing materials and toiletries, made the Iraqi president open up to Piro, a Lebanese-American who spoke Arabic. Saddam still wouldn't admit that he had no weapons of mass destruction, even when it was obvious there would be military action against him, because of the perception that he did. This is what Piro find out. Right before the invasion of Iraq, Saddam still, of course, that wouldn't have stopped George Bush. George Bush didn't give a damn. He did what he was told to do by Cheney and the rest of these bastards. But Saddam, poor Saddam, really, really had his testicles caught in a vice, didn't he? Huh? He couldn't back down. Well, according to Piro, quote, for him it was critical that he was seen as still the strong, defiant Saddam. He thought that faking having the weapons would prevent the Iranians from reinvading Iraq, end quote. Talk about the perfect confluence of morons. George Bush, Saddam Hussein. It's just perfect intersection, right? And as a result of that perfect intersection, hundreds of thousands of people have died. Son of a bitch. I and during the break, I was listening to some of the Republican pandering on MSNBC, and they're all talking about the glorious victory that's ours for the taking in Iraq. If the damn Democrats would just stop talking negatively. God, I hate these people. Cash is calling from Laredo, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Cash, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Mike? Nice to speak to you, fine. I just wanted to touch a little on the economic stimulus package you were talking a moment ago.
Okay.
Well, my family's facing a foreclosure any of the next coming days. We don't sell the house in time. And what happens is we don't make anything, right? Lose all the equity and lose everything.
Now, when you say your family, you talk about you and your spouse, or you talk about your parents, or what?
My parents and my siblings.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. The whole family.
Right.
The four of us. And then they got this economic stimulus package, right? We're talking about $600 for the individual, $1,200 for the spouses that may go out in May. How many homes are going to be lost before May? How many incomes are going to not suffice until May?
Right.
Right.
And even if you had the $600 tomorrow, seriously, Cash, what would you do with it?
$600 tomorrow is going to pay the interest on something, for God's sake.
I hear that.
It's going to pay the interest on something. But anyways, I wanted to say I really enjoy your show and your coverage. It's relieving. It's something you got to wait for at the end of the day with all that's going on.
Well, Cash, you say your family's about to lose your house. How close to foreclosure are you?
Well, there's 4 months unpaid, and it's really up to the mortgage company countrywide. It can come up any day they want.
Oh, you have a countrywide? I thought countrywide was trying desperately to work with some of their mortgagees.
Well, the true story is they see equity on the house and something like in the 90,000 region, they're going to push completely to foreclosure so that they make that money, so that that 90,000 in equity becomes their money, makes up their lost money, and it makes up, you know, and it adds some.
How is this affecting your family, your parents, you?
Well, it's not easy. It really is a breakup of the family. I mean, and the issue of the economy was, you know, it was mounting. It was getting worse, and now it's, you know, it's either you or somebody else. And I mean, it's devastating to put it simply. But at best, that can't bring us down, you know.
What are your parents working?
Two incomes. A self-employed business in perfumes and colognes, and my father is a salesman at a Toyota dealer. So you're talking about two incomes, and it's just not enough. Interest rates on both the rent, it's just ridiculous.
How is your dad doing where it concerns commissions on selling new cars?
Not good enough, because there's all kinds of time you got to wait before, you know, you sell a car. It takes about several weeks before those papers go in. So when you actually start seeing it in your paycheck, it comes in intervals, and so that kind of hurts as well.
Are your parents getting, are they getting stressed out? What do you notice as part of the stress that your family is going through?
It's terrible. They're both 60 years old, and they're pushing day in and day out, and it really doesn't amount to much in the end. With the foreclosure, you know, the academic bills, I mean, it just goes down the line. And I'm telling you, what I'm trying to say is that I just didn't understand the extent to which the economy was recessing until, you know, you feel it yourself.
Sure.
And I mean, it's in every corner. I wanted to ask you what you thought about, and I know you were going on yesterday, and the day before, about Obama's comments on the great chunk of ideas the Republican Party has had.
I'll tell you what, Cash, I'm going to have something to say about that a little bit later in the program tonight.
Okay.
I've been all over the map on that one. Listen, do me a favor, stay in touch. Let me know how your family's working out, okay?
I'll definitely stay in touch, and I look forward to your show. Thank you for your show.
All right, man. Yeah, thanks, nice Cash. Evening. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
You take care. Multiply that by what? How many hundreds of thousands of people, right? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
And I started to laugh. I gave him a hug and he gave me his autograph. Reeling in my disbelief, I know that it was just a dream. All the covers that I see are... crumbling around me. Why does everything cost so much money? Could somebody please help out my family? My mom needs hearing aids, new shoulders and new legs. My dad needs a break, he works all day every day. My brother needs a place and a job where he can make enough money to take care of his baby. Here's a
out by right-wing talk radio, you found a home with Mike Malloy.
It's about 24 past the hour. Oh, and by the way, yesterday the Senate passed a revised defense spending bill that gave Bush pretty much everything he wanted. The bill passed the Senate 91-3. 91-3. And it gives Bush $700 billion to further destabilize the world and destroy the country. 91-3. $700 billion. Bush had rejected an earlier version of the bill. Remember, we talked about this because there was a provision in there that would have guaranteed that victims of state-sponsored abuse can sue foreign governments in court and collect judgments by seizing its assets inside the U.S. Bush said no, that would have exposed Iraq to high-dollar lawsuits, which means it would have had to come from the Treasury, which means oil, which means, you see how this works? Just like the Bush crime family was against the Supreme Court ruling in favor of the people that got screwed by Enron, the Bush crime family also is against people who have a legitimate claim against the government of Iraq. So the Democrats took that out. They said, oh, yes, sir, took it out. The estimates are that Iraq has about $25 billion in assets in the U.S. that could be tied up in litigation, not to mention whatever is underground that the Bush crime family plans on exploiting years after Bush leaves office and gets back into the oil business. Democrats revised the defense spending bill to allow Bush to grant immunity to Iraq. As long as, and this is what the Democrats put in there, as long as Bush determines that granting immunity to Iraq promotes Iraqi reconstruction, and as long as Baghdad remains what is referred to as a, quote, reliable ally, end quote, in the war on terror. Oh, way to go, Democrats! You put some teeth into that. The House passed the new bill last week by a vote of 369-46. And you people wonder why the Democratic Party makes me wretch. Son of a bitch. So there you go. 91-3 in the Senate in favor of another $700 billion for Bush and the military-industrial complex. Oh, but don't forget, you get $600 to go spend on shiny things made in China. And the House passed the bill by a vote of 369-146. Good God. Break here. When we come back, we're going to talk for a few minutes to Nancy Skinner. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Reality.
Bring you down. Harmony. Spin you round. Information. Yes. Bye bye bye. Material. You take all day long. Can't you see it's all?
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, you are indeed. It's about 25 before the hour. Nancy Skinner ran for Congress in the Michigan's 9th Congressional District back in the 06 election, almost picked off the old Republican fart who feels like he owns that seat, but did not at the last minute. She's running again. She joins us now from somewhere in Metro Detroit, I would imagine, right, Nancy?
Yes, from Royal Oak, Michigan, Mike.
Hi.
And what I'm laughing that you're still on the radio and I'm still running for office. What's up with that?
It's two miracles, Nancy. That's what it is. Nancy and I, just full disclosure here, we worked together at WLS in Chicago all those years ago. Interestingly, I had Eric Zorn on last night. All we need to do now is get Ski Anderson together, and the four of us can go to Collins and sit down and have a beer like we used to.
After the impeachment acquittal and all that. Now we have even more interesting things we could do. I'm watching. I know you're on the air and you're not watching the Republican debate, Mike, but we sure have a laugh over this one. Mike Huckabee just was describing his fair tax plan and how it would solve all the ills of society, including getting rid of pimps, hookers, drug dealers, prostitutes. And then he added, in other words, non-Republicans.
Oh, my God. It's just gotten so grim and gruesome. I swear to God. All right. The one of the reasons we invited you on the program is you are doing the same thing that you did last time with this democracyforamerica.com grassroots all-star vote. Mm-hmm. Tell people what this is about, because you're not here necessarily to make a pitch for contributions, although you will take them. But tell us what this DFA thing is.
Well, this costs you nothing. Okay, this is where progressives across the country get to weigh in, and it's not the party, you know, bosses or big
right.
money donors. This is where we decide what kind of Democrats we want to send to Congress, okay, because we've seen with this bunch that they're often too afraid to take the courageous steps and do what's right. We've talked about that for a long time. So this is a contest. It's democracyforamerica.com. Of course, the website's down now that I'm on the show. But
is it really?
Yes, it is. It's temporarily, but you got to be persistent, because I think a lot of people are really each of the candidates are surging, trying to get their candidate out there. Came in. It's just an online vote, and last year I came in second place. I was winning this thing until the last 2 minutes, and then Jerry McNerney of California came ahead of me and won, and he went on to win his race against Pombo, the incumbent, and is now Congressman McNerney, and I visited him in Washington, D.C., and he remembered beating me. But it's a big deal, because it probably raised his campaign about $100,000.
So that's what will happen with your campaign if you get the most votes.
That's what it raised him. So it could even be more, because they will send a email out to their list, 675,000 people. Right now I'm in second place, and I have an opponent in my primary race who's in fourth place, and he's, you know, a more conservative Democrat, let's Rahm Emanuel type recruit.
God.
We know
God.
What that story is, right?
I don't want to say anything here to make a difficult situation any more difficult. And when I say difficult, if people had any damn sense in the 9th District, they would just vote you in and be done with this, because I think you would be tremendous asset to the voters in Michigan, the entire state, not just the 9th. But because the Democratic Leadership Conference of the DLC, what's left of it, is still exerting this incredible pressure against progressive candidates like Nancy Skinner here, it's a constant uphill battle. So if you don't mind, truth seekers, go to democracyforamerica.com. And vote for her. That's all you have to do. That's all you have to do. Oh, and by the way, her website, her campaign website, is SkinnerForCongress.com. So you need to check out both. Go to SkinnerForCongress.com and then also go to DemocracyForAmerica.com. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump all over what you were saying there,
but you're right on point. And what will happen is they cut this thing off. The contest ends Sunday at midnight, and the final three advance to one week round, final round next week. And if we're in the top three, this is going to become a battle between the progressive community, you know, progressive Democrats and conservative Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a chance to, everyone has a chance here to say really what kind of Democrats we want to send by a simple vote online. And be persistent. You keep checking at this website, Democracy, all weekend and kept checking my place out. I came within, Nolenberg, the final was 51-47%. That I lost. I was outspent 7-1,
mm-hmm.
and I ran on the issue of energy independence and global warming in the home of the auto industry. Okay, Robert Kennedy Jr. did my first endorsement ads, Mike, in the home of the auto industry, where they mm-hmm. told me, no, you cannot run on that issue.
Right.
So I exerted independence and leadership, and I, you know, I've cared about that issue deeply for my whole career,
yes.
and worked on it. And it, you know, I guarantee you, people coming out of Michigan are not going to be supportive of that, because they're so beholden to the auto industry,
mm-hmm.
and which I think has hurt us. My argument has been it really has not helped us to fight innovation and change. It's hurt us.
Mm-hmm. Just for people who don't know, when I first met Nancy 1,000 years ago in Illinois, she had been active in Illinois, working out of the governor's office in Illinois, if I'm not mistaken, on environmental issues and advising corporations on how to become green before green was cool.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, and what's really funny is that, if your listeners don't know, I was on WLS and talked into running in the Senate primary against a guy who had no chance of winning because he
right.
had a terrible name, and his name happened to be Barack Obama.
Yeah, I remember that, too.
So I was in, yes, one of the seven Democrats in the race. Now, everybody's calling me wanting to get a hold of what we talked about and, the, you know, of course, the debates, given that this mm-hmm. campaign has heated up lately. So I went and reviewed some of the old debates and campaign tapes, and I'm out there talking about green-collar jobs, literally, all these
mm-hmm.
things that are now in vogue, and that we need courageous Democrats. And Barack Obama, I found one cut of him. They said the question was that he had touted himself as the only candidate who opposed the war, and he stopped him and said, no, I have to give credit to Nancy Skinner. She's been on the radio opposing this war. So I have perhaps the next president of the United States stopping to give me credit for
endorsing you. That sounds to me like an endorsement.
Oh, and then, yeah, of course. And he and I got to be good friends. And then when I ran for Congress, I moved to my hometown and was on the radio here and ran again. And he endorsed me. He came to town and he called me the sharpest opponent in his race and heartily endorsed me. So I'm all for it. I'm excited to see people embrace.
Well, again, I don't understand why the Democratic Party is not backing you 1,000% after what you almost pulled off against this dinosaur. And I don't mean Dino, Democrat name. I'm talking about this Republican who's Nolenberg, who, you know, nothing against old people. I hope to become one. But isn't he around 80 years old?
I think he's like 76.
Oh, that's around 80, isn't it?
Depends on who you ask.
Right.
But you know, worse than
but he doesn't represent the people there. Who does he represent?
The contributors to his campaign, oil companies, insurance companies. He's an insurance guy. And
right.
he really, his record is undistinguished for really. His biggest claim to fame in all these 14 years in office is that he fought the effort to repeal the law on low-flow toilets. I am not kidding you. So that's it.
Was he in favor of low flow or against?
No, he was no low flow. Yes.
No low flow.
He wanted
5 or 6 gallons to wash away a little tinkle. Right?
He wanted the Great Lakes to flow through the pipe.
Oh my God!
Now also then the Nolenberg Amendment, which is more serious, was an amendment that prohibited the federal government from spending any money on global or implementing Kyoto Protocol, anything on global warming.
Oh, my God.
He was the biggest antagonist to anything about global warming. So what a match this was. Here I was saying that this is the critical, I agree with Al Gore, this is our planetary emergency and our opportunity really to invest in all these green technologies. And here this guy, antiquated as he was fighting it all the way. And that was my message. And I got out and I worked hard. And I went to every meeting and I raised $420,000 with no help from the National Party. Almost won this race.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are again, you know, coming. It's happened. It's not just me, though, Mike, because I've talked to a lot of candidates who almost won in lots of other districts, and they were great candidates, and they worked hard, and somehow, you know, the idea that we have to recruit more conservative white male lawyers because we think that people can stomach that better, is kind of what's going on. But as you look at the presidential race, it's proven not true. You've got a woman and an African-American. They're the most exciting candidates. Poor John Edwards can't get a break on these debates.
I know.
He doesn't differentiate between what's new and different.
Well, this is the thing that is puzzling to me. Economist after economist, think tank after think tank at universities have pretty clearly stated that an all-out effort, government-supported in terms of money, effort to get us off of fossil fuels would open up hundreds of thousands of jobs in technologies that are even now just on the drawing board. And it is a given that the internal combustion engine, the days are numbered. And in order to move forward, it would open up hundreds of thousands of jobs, and yet these bastards just won't do it. Nancy, hold on a second. You hear the music. I got to do a break, okay?
Sure.
Let me put you on hold. We'll come back. Go to nancyskinner.com during the break. Would you please, Skinnerforcongress.com. Skinnerforcongress.com. And also go to democracyforamerica.com and vote for her. Skinnerforcongress.com. Before the hour, we're talking with Nancy Skinner. Hopefully you went to her website during the break, skinnerforcongress.com, and also democracyforamerica.com. That website may be down, as Nancy said, but a Democracy for America, but you've got to keep trying, and you've got to cast a citizen vote for this candidate for Michigan's 9th congressional district.
I only need 19 votes to move into first place, Mike.
Oh my
so
God.
Folks got to monitor this. You know, there's a lot of strategic moves. People wait till the last minute, then they
right.
send out email blasts. So I really encourage people to keep an eye on this website all weekend. It ends Sunday night at midnight. Then the final three advance. So
I'm just going to ask people who listen to this program now on the 20 various stations we're on the two satellite networks and on the internet stream. I really want you to do this. I really do. This is one of those things that I really want you to do. democracyforamerica.com and vote, cast your vote for Nancy Skinner. And if you can't get there tonight, then go tomorrow. If you can't get there tomorrow, then go Saturday. I really, really, really want you to do this. I haven't come begging for anything for over a year. So here I am, Mike Malloy, saying, please go to Skinner, go to democracyforamerica.com. And also go to Nancy's website and see what she's about. If you don't know what she's about, you need to know. And as far as direct contributions, we've talked about this before. If a thousand people would send $10 to the candidates, progressive Democrats that we've had on this program, it really is a shot in the arm. $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 in a local congressional district is a lot of money. This is
especially since Rahm Emanuel came to town and raised the big bucks for me.
Do you how do you maintain your loyalty as a Democrat, knowing that the National Democratic Party, once again, even after the great showing you had last time, is just kind of ignoring you? How do you do
well,
that?
Well, and it's not, everyone says, well, you're such a great candidate, and you've been out there a long time. It's the machine. It's the system, Mike. It's just all become about money and connections, who you know and who you owe, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so
kind of like talk radio.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. But we've survived.
You couldn't get the backing of the Rahm Emanuel gang, and I got fired from Air America. Go figure. But, and so do you. Like you said, we just keep going. It's the Energizer Bunny all over again.
Yeah, and, it's funny because I, on my website, SkinnerForCongress.com, I started posting all these videos of, I've been doing television, in fact, all these food fight political shows since the year 2000. In fact, I was on Fox, you'll love this, I was on the Fox Business Channel tonight. They have a new business channel. And I arrived late, my battery was dead, I showed up at the very last second when I needed to be on. It was 4-on-1, Neil Cavuto, three other panelists, and myself. debating the economic stimulus plan and the Bush tax cuts versus what we're trying to do now. And, you know, sometimes... And I whooped them all, okay? The short story is I whooped. Everyone said, you beat. It was 4-on-1, and you won. How did you do? Well, you know what? I've been out there a long time, and I really believe that we in our party need better communicators that can get on these shows and say it with courage. And the videos I'm posting on my website are me before the war in Iraq. I'm like on Wolf Blitzer, and this was before. I wanted to go back to that point. Steve Maltzberg is a conservative host in New York, and I was asking all those questions, like, why are we rushing this? Is there a political motivation? Does this have anything to do with oil? And this is before the war when, as you remember, it was very difficult to be holding that position. I went on national TV and did that. And that's why Barack Obama credited me and folks like that. So it takes courage when it's tough to do it. And you've always done it on the radio, and I'm trying to do it in political office.
I'm glad you have those videos at your website, because I can remember going over to your house in Chicago and looking at, you know, this is back in the day. I'm talking about 99, 2000, back in the day where you would be invited on MSNBC or CNN to talk these political issues. And if you remember, we used to sit there and queue up these old videotapes, and Kathy and I and you and would sit there and look at these videotapes. So it just seems like a million years ago. You've got to do it this time. You really have got to do it. You have got to become the member of Congress from the 9th District in Michigan. There is just you got to do it this time, Nancy. I don't know what it's going to take. Maybe the listeners to this program can help by going to your website and then going to democracyforamerica.com.
And, you know, one more thing. If you really want to, if you feel passionately about this, send it out. There's a link on there. You can send this to your list, okay, because that helps expand this thing. Hey, I've heard this woman or Mike Malloy begged me to do this, but please just go vote. It costs you nothing. It's an online vote, and it's a way for progressives to really say, this is who we want. And it, can you imagine if we had a whole cadre of Nancy Skinners in there who would stand up and you know, I had a young man, I was giving a talk the other day, and this, I asked the crowd, why do you think that this current Congress caved in on so many measures at the end? The war funding bill without any restrictions, the $16 billion in tax breaks to oil companies, etc. And the various responses. One young man said, well, they have to. They have to do that or they won't get reelected. You're not being realistic. They have to do that to save the control of the party. And I said to him, with all due respect, young man, I couldn't disagree with you more. Because when we start acting on our conviction, when we stand with courage, like Paul Wellstone and like Russ Feingold and others, we'll start winning more elections. Mm-hmm. We won't lose our seats. We'll win more. We'll bring more people into the process. And the audience started clapping and cheering. Young man, I think learned a valuable lesson.
It is absolutely the truth. Nancy, I hope you get the support this time that you need. I think the country does need to have people like you in office, and I hope this happens. Please stay in touch. Let us know how this goes, okay?
Thanks, Mike. You take care.
All right, Nancy.
All right, democracyforamerica.com.
There you go.
Take
Thanks,
care.
Nancy.
Bye.
All right. Nancy... Or, I'm sorry, SkinnerForCongress.com, SkinnerForCongress.com. Visit her website, would you please? And DemocracyForAmerica.com and cast a vote for her, please. Thank you. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. We'll be back.
Bye. like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir. I have tried in my way.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network. Got an email here from Eleanor. If Cash is still listening, if you will send me an email with your return address on it, I have something that may help you out. Cash being the caller from Texas, was it? Who was in trouble with their mortgage and some other things. So if Cash, if you're still listening, just send me an email and I'll forward this to you. Also, a couple other emails came in during the break. I'll just share them with you. This is from KC. Hi, Mike. I am 61, like the parents of one of the callers tonight. KC is referring to Cash. I raised 5 children who are all great men now. I'm very proud of them. At 35, I went to school and received my GED and went on to get my associate, bachelor of science, and an MBA at 55. Unfortunately, because I had to wait so long to get my education, now I am strapped with student loans. Also, my 38-year-old son that had never been married or had children, who became chronically ill with progressive multiple sclerosis 3 years ago and had no insurance, I had to quit my job and start one at home, which now is down the tubes, let alone with the home insurance and taxes going sky high here in Florida. I've tried to get a job for 1.5 years in Florida and cannot find anything even temporary. I was named Employee of the Month at my job place in 2003, so I have great references, but that doesn't mean diddly squat. I've never seen diddly squat written out like that, Casey. I went yesterday to take computer tests and passed them all at a temporary job location, and they said they would call me if something came up and asked if I would take less than $12 an hour. I told them if they could get me something for 6 months or more, I would consider it. I must admit I cry a lot. It is getting really, really rough. We didn't have a home loan that was a subprime, but we did have to take out a second loan, and that did us in. This is really getting me now. I pray every day that something, just something, will happen, and I'll get a call for a job. I never thought it would be like this, Mike. I thought at this age I would be looking forward to getting older. It is getting very scary out here. With 2 sons who have served in Iraq and 1 that is over there right now, I have gone through a lot, and I just hope it'll get better soon. I know I'm not alone. KC. And the subject line says, Mike, count me in, 61 and hanging on by a thread. Bob in Kentucky writes regarding the tax rebate, Mike, I'm a 56-year-old computer design engineer who lost my job in 2004. Could not find and still cannot find a job, probably my age. Lost my home and finally had to file bankruptcy. $1,200 from Bush? Blank Bush and his insane economic policies. I think I'll send it back and tell him to stick it. It really does speak volumes, doesn't it, about this country that people can lose everything because of effort or lack of effort on their part. No. Because of policies set in motion by Democrats and Republicans. When I think about, and I don't dare think about it too much because it just almost immobilizes me. But when I think about the hundreds of thousands of jobs that have been exported, like so much pork bellies, out of this country because of NAFTA. When I think about how predatory capitalism says to the American worker that built this country up and gave all the executives and all the boards of directors all these tremendous, cushiony paychecks and retirement plans, and all the workers now who are just pissed on, just told to flake off. I remember before this happened, in 1970, I moved from Tampa to Flint, Michigan. It's a long story, so I won't get into it. But when I got to Flint, Michigan, as I drove in, it was in October, and it was snowing, and the snow was dirty. And it's because Flint, Michigan was this roaring industrial town. General Motors and Flint, Michigan were peanut butter and jelly. You couldn't have one without the other, so most people thought. Everybody had a job who wanted one. And the households were run by one wage earner. For the most part, the husband, sometimes the wife. And I left Flint about 8 months later and moved to Atlanta. And in the next 10 years, Flint, Michigan, and Toledo, and Detroit, and Pontiac, and Cleveland, and Findlay, and Youngstown, and Akron, it just goes on and on. All of these cities that were involved in the auto industry, feeder cities, just became, some wag labeled it all the Rust Belt. Now, the jobs didn't disappear. They were just moved overseas. First, they were moved to the Southwest. Then they were moved to Mexico. Then they were moved to China. God knows where they're going to wind up. Vietnam now. So it's just, it's difficult for me, maybe it is for you, to think about the people in this country, decent people. And no politics here. Don't tell me they cut their throats when they became Reagan Democrats. Maybe so, maybe not. I'm to hell with politics right now. I'm just talking about people who really believed and really dedicated themselves to the American dream. If I work hard and if I am loyal to my employer, I can raise my family, I can put my kids through school, they can have a better life than I'll have. And I'm willing to give up 40 years of my life. I will go into the factory or the mine or the farm, whatever it is. I will go there and I will bust my ass and I will work very hard. And so many American workers did that. A lot of them willingly, some of them grudgingly, but they still did it. And those jobs are gone. Now, why are those jobs gone? Everybody still drives cars. Why is there no auto industry in America? Well, you know why as well as I do. There's no union movement in America. Why not? Well, you know why as well as I do. And this happened in a very just a chunk of my lifetime. Not over the entire course of my life. No. Just in the past 30 years. A chunk of my lifetime has seen this happen. Wow. Kathy in Green Bay writes, so the New York Times endorsed McCain and one of the Democrats who can't beat him nationally. Nice.
Yeah. Well, that's the New York Times.
They don't give a rat's ass about the real Democrats. And the New York Times editorial board would listen to a Nancy Skinner and pat her on the head and say, "There, there, darling, don't worry." Back to your phone calls. Jeremy is calling from California, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
I'm pretty good.
Eight more months. Breathe. Unless Hillary gets in office, it'll be another 4 years.
right.
If I might have about 4 minutes, I know that's asking a lot.
Well, okay. I can give you 30 seconds, and then I'm going to have to take a break. Have you timed out what you're going to say?
Not really, but I'll try.
You asked for 4 minutes. I just wonder why.
Well, I'll try, and then if you want to hold me over, that's fine.
Let me put you on hold now because I'm going to have to break here in just a second. All right, Jeremy?
Sure.
All right.
Okay.
All right, we'll come right back to Jeremy momentarily, which gives me a few seconds to say, for people in the Phoenix area, if you haven't gotten your tickets yet to this event coming up Saturday, February 23rd, with Scott Ritter and me, get your ticket. Go to 1480kphx.com. 1480kphx.com. This is going to be a blowout. I'm not sure exactly what the aftermath will be. I said the other night there's a good possibility that Ritter and I will be hauled away kicking and screaming with orange jumpsuits on and hoods over our heads. I don't know. But Go to kphx.com if you would. Check it out. 1480kphx.com and get a ticket. They're not that expensive. And if you're in the Phoenix area, come by Saturday evening, February 23rd. Yow.
Looking at hands for the lines that were, and in every masterpiece of literature, for dignity. English books stranded in a black heart.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
You know that's a game that I hate to lose. And I'm feeling the strain. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
21 past the hour. All right, Jeremy, who has called in from California, listening to Sirius. Okay, Jeremy, let her rip.
Well, I enjoyed your rant about capitalism, before, but I would suggest we have actually something that's kind of on the other end. It's like corporate socialism, frankly. In a capitalistic country, we know capital is ever given without something in return. Well, if you look at the Fortune 100. You know, like, say, our entire economy is based on, like, say, high technology sectors. They're all paid for by the public through the Pentagon system, besides the defense system. And while it's too inefficient for somebody to make a profit on it, we pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
We develop it by the military. And when it's profitable, it's handed over without a return on our investment as the public, like it would be in a capitalistic society.
Right.
It's not even capitalism anymore. It's just a sort of a corporate feudalism, frankly. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when those businesses fail, we bail them out, like, you know, banks and you name it. I mean, you know, computers, information systems, the entire process of manufacturing was developed by taxpayers through the military system. So mm-hmm. when these neocons talk about socialists out there, it's kind of like a thief reaching in the back of your pants to lift your wallet and shouting thief and pointing to distract you while he makes off with your wallet. You know?
Sure, of course.
it's kind of a joke. But anyway, I called you a couple months ago, too, and you probably don't remember, but I said, what do you want to bet they're going to bail out Wall Street by flooding the market with cash? And I was kind of half joking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you know, comes this stimulus package, seeing as how most Americans are in debt right now, because of gas prices and the falling dollar and whatever, and mortgage payments. For most of us, isn't that going to go straight to the banks and the credit companies, you know,
mm-hmm.
the banks or to the oil companies anyway?
Yeah, it will. That's why this is an insult. It's not a joke. The so-called economic stimulus package is an insult to the intelligence of the American
yeah.
worker, and it's also just an absolute brutal slap in his face or her
yeah.
face. It's just saying, you know, you little pissant, you have no worth, no value, nothing. But in order to keep you from getting involved in an armed revolution against this government, we're going to throw you $600. Now sit down and shut up.
Yeah, enjoy your scraps that fall from the table that you've worked for the past 230 years, huh? You know, I mean, didn't Adam Smith and all these founders of our country believe in the right of the worker to have a fruit of their, you know, the fruits of their own labor or a share in, you know, the work that they do? And all of a sudden, these Newt Gingrich prodigies are telling us that working people are the socialists because we want to set labor prices. You know, I mean, Newt Gingrich, who had the number one subsidies in his county of the entire country outside the Pentagon system and the space system, mm-hmm. talks about rugged entrepreneurship. What a joke. You know, we're not supposed to say his name because he's sort of the Emmanuel Goldstein of today, but Noam Chomsky, if you've ever read him, I'm sure
sure
you're somewhat familiar with him, you know.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
no matter what your views of his, no matter what you think of his views, he doesn't lie. I think it's he points this out pretty eloquently.
Well, let me ask you, Jeremy, before we end the call, how much longer do you think it'll be, if things continue the way they are, before there is violence in this country? And by that, I mean people who finally say they've had enough. And I think historically it's been proven that revolution, armed revolution or armed insurrection, I'm talking about strictly an internal situation. I'm not talking about insurgents or terrorists or anything of the sort, where an indigenous population rises up against its leadership, usually occurs at a certain point where the disparity of income, at least in modern times, where the disparity of income becomes so great that people, the 80 or 90% on the bottom of the heap are really on the bottom of the heap, and the 5, 10, 15% on the top of the heap just keep going up. At that point, there's an explosion. How much longer do you think it'll be in this country before that might occur?
We are there. The only reason they still are able to maintain power is because they're betting on the fact that people aren't going to realize how on the bottom they were. I mean, our country is so rich. I mean, there's so much money in our country, but most of us work our entire lives and have nothing to show for it, you know? That goes completely against our founding father. Totally. Completely. I mean, you know, but
well, it also...
I don't know. Well, you tell me, has there ever been any major social change that has occurred when the senator, you know, the Congress hasn't actually felt threatened?
Probably not.
Can you think of a single instance?
Probably not. Jeremy, I have to leave it there because we have to break. I hope you call again. It was very interesting talking to you, so take care, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've tortured and scared you for 20-odd years. Then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion.
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Got an email here from a regular emailer. I'm not going to use his name because, or where he's writing from, because it could jeopardize his job. But he or she, I don't even want to give you the person's gender. But the person just wrote this, and I don't share it with you. He's or she, the person writing, teaches at a Christian school. And the writer says, I'm beginning to understand that freedom of conscience or freedom of speech is not valued in the Christian school world. Recently, Alan Keyes spoke at our school. And though our administration assured us it would not be a political rally, it was every bit of one, down to the distribution of campaign literature to children who can't vote. Not only was it that, it was a brainwashing, and I'm both angry and sad that everyone there, especially our kids, my students that I love, took the bait and swallowed it whole. For a self-proclaimed constitutional scholar, Alan Keyes quoted absolutely none of it, but went on for a solid hour about why the separation of church and state is a myth and employed all of the other tired religious conservative applause lines. How could anyone possibly read the Constitution, the Declaration, the Federalist, and all the other writings of Jefferson, Madison, Hamilton, Franklin, etc., and conclude that they were advocating a theocracy? How could they not understand that the celebrated pious pilgrims came to escape persecution that resulted from the merging of the church and state in England? I had a shot at one question during Q&A time, so I played it safe. I decided against asking about his disowning. of his own lesbian daughter. And I asked him instead what he thought about the anti-establishment and free exercise of religion clauses in the First Amendment. He completely dodged the question and oddly said that since, quote, Congress shall make no law, it's up to the states in the Tenth Amendment, end quote. What the hell? He then spent 10 minutes rousing the crowd over getting God back in government. It was comical, however, to see the crowd's reaction when he took a couple of jabs at George W. Bush on immigration. Everyone kind of looked at each other to see if they should applaud or not. Key said a lot of crazy things, too many to mention, but he said something to the effect of, quote, those who do not acknowledge and submit to God's authority forsake their right of citizenship, end quote. I almost fell out of my chair while everyone else clapped in approval and shouted amens. I wonder if they would clap and shout amen if they saw the infidel non-Christians being hauled off to concentration camps under the Keyes administration. Sounds very Jesus-y. I know the Bible, and I know the Constitution, and there's nothing in either one that advocates a religious takeover of government. We had discussion in my classes the rest of the day, and I could tell whose parents listened to conservative talk radio with all the trite one-liners. And it was also apparent that nearly all of them have it ingrained in them to hate Democrats, whom Alan Keyes noted were signed on with the devil. So for fun, I asked them what they thought about Hillary. Hate and evil were the most used as they frothed at the mouth, but none of them could tell me anything about her except that she was for killing babies. Wow. Maybe before I'm exposed as a godforsaken liberal and purged, I can provoke some free and independent thought among my students. The walls are closing in. Keeping it lit in, and the writer names the state and then signs his or her name. And this one comes from Co-Major. It's titled Stimulus Shimulus. Very quick. Co-Major writes, great stimulus package. Wait 5 months to supposedly fix an immediate crisis. They say that due to this being a busy time for the IRS, people may not see these checks until June or later. But I have a better idea. Give all taxpayers earning less than $100,000 last year tax immunity. That's right, tax immunity. Just stroll down to your local H&R Block with your W-2, fill out a one-page return, and have all your taxes from 2007 back in your wallet in 2 weeks. This way, we don't have to worry about the excessive burden on the IRS. Real money, well, as real as it gets today, would flow back into the economy almost immediately instead of in 6 months. Although I will happily cash my check when it comes, we all know that, as one pundit described it, it is nothing more than a welfare check. And let's face it, our taxes only go to pay the interest on our mounting debt, which is so enormous as to be incomprehensible anyway. Yeah, that's a good idea. Tax immunity. Everything you paid in 07, that would be one hell of a stimulant, wouldn't it? It might even work. But no, you're not going to get that, folks. You're going to get your chump change. You're going to get your little bag of marbles and Hershey Kisses, your $600. Here, go play. Go play, you dumb bastards. That's the message. We are all considered dumbasses. Here's your little bag of money. Go. Now stop bugging me. Everything's okay. Here's your money. This is what you little pigs wanted. Here, take it. Go. And those $20 million apartments in the upper Manhattan, they're still selling like hotcakes, aren't they? Back to your phone calls. Alan is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Alan.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, been better, looking around. I'm just watching, you know, it's a big word in America, choice, part of our narrative. We hear it shoved in our ears every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we sit around, we watch choice melting away from us. We haven't even gone through a quarter of the primaries, and our choices have been made for us already.
Yeah, you notice that too, huh?
And, you know, you look around, and you just know that the whole primary process in America, not just in this particular race, but the primary process in general, is sort of a first level of removing choice for people so that you don't have too many controversial figures getting into the actual race. Mm-hmm. Controversial, according to some minds.
Yeah.
And I look around at the, you know, it wasn't many months ago that people were frothing at the mouth, upset with the Democratic Party. Why don't you stop the war funding? What about impeachment? What about this? What about that? And now all they can talk about is Hillary's tears and whether Bill is saying the right thing or not. And mm-hmm. we have been so managed and pulled in. All of our discussions now, from now until next November, are going to be about anything but what was on our mind.
Mm-hmm.
The war, torture, what happened with Katrina. All of these things have been swept away under the rug.
They never happened.
Very nicely.
Yeah, down the memory hole. They're gone, Alan. They never happened.
Well, yeah, and that's what bothers me. When you have to start thinking outside of the box and outside of the narrative, because look what happened just a couple weeks ago. You know, one of the shining lights of at least it shows possibilities is with Robert Wexler.
Right.
Now, I'm one of the founders of the South Florida Impeachment Coalition, and when Wexler finally came around, and he sits on the House Judiciary Committee, and came around to call for hearings. Mm-hmm. And on his site, WexlerWantsHearings.com,
right.
he got more people signing up than he'd expected. Over 200,000.
Yeah, I read that.
People showed up, and now, ironically, Dennis Kucinich is going to introduce a bill for impeaching Bush just after he announced that he is dropping out, which I think is a shame in some ways. He also sort of dropped out in 2004 at the Democratic platform convention meeting mm-hmm. in Hollywood, mm-hmm. where he told his delegates to stop fighting for any of his platform issues. It doesn't leave us with much choice. So I feel that with a lack of choice, like the other night you were saying, well, what do we do? What do we do? I have to bring up another possibility that at least people ought to think about trying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had 200,000 people were capable of writing to Wexler, and as he said on his radio interviews, it was that got him. I mean, the 200,000 didn't precede his efforts; it came after his efforts. But every time he would come home, he would hear people talking and screaming with signs and everything, and it did affect him. So, what if we take that number two, that 200,000, and we got 200,000 people to walk with their feet and have the Democratic Party listen as people change their registration to green. As it's been mentioned before, switch to green with that number 2.org says that, you know, maybe, you know, they didn't listen in November.
Mm-hmm.
They had no reason to. They have you in a corner. They figure they're there. And as long as you're there, they can take you for granted. But if enough people were to suddenly, you know, vote with the registration and say, you know, I've had it. I one day, it's not so much the changing of who you're necessarily going to vote for, but the fact of the matter is that I need an anti-war message between now and November. I don't want it to disappear. Mm-hmm. I need a message that says no to torture and, you know, and so forth, and a message that says single-payer health care. And I can give that message no matter who I end up ultimately voting for in that voting booth. I can give that message by changing my registration.
That's, absolutely a good idea. I swear to God.
So if you don't mind repeating it, it's switch2green.org with the number 2. It's a tool. We have to use every tool we have at this moment before, as you say, going into, you know, box 4.
I hear you. Hey, listen, I got to leave it there. Thank you. Always good to hear from you. Alan, take care. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Track and coming down a bit too hard. Oh, maybe I'll be there to shake you.
It is about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, Catherine Bay. And all you people know what you did. Don't forget, please go to SkinnerForCongress.com. And the fact that I happen to know her is not the reason I'm asking you to go there. It's because she's a progressive Democrat. I have known Nancy for over 10 years. She's a progressive Democrat. Who are we having on the air? Aren't we having somebody else, Kathy, tomorrow night? Sam Simpson, the woman from Florida who's also running for Congress, also a progressive Democrat. And that's why I think it's important to or give up. Either keep fighting or give up. There's two choices, right? So check out Nancy's website, please. Skinner for Congress. And then, of course, democracyforamerica.com is where you go to vote. Back to your phone calls. Steve is calling from Albany, New York. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Mike.
Sure.
I tried to call in last night after I got off the call with the Kucinich National Campaign because we'd learned about the introduction of the impeachment articles against George Bush on that call. And it came as a complete surprise, though, today that he was going to pull out. And, in fact, I got the call when my wife and I were flyering this afternoon. And I just wanted to call in and say, you know, we're still want to let people know that even though Dennis has pulled out of the campaign to protect his congressional seat against the corporate jackals out there, you can still vote for Dennis.
Oh, yeah.
He's on the ballot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I definitely, he's on the ballot here in Georgia. And you can bet your bottom dollar I will be voting for Dennis Kucinich. And you're right. It's my understanding that back in Ohio, there are six people who are going to challenge him for his seat. And you and I both know that some of those Democrats that are going to challenge him are going to be Rahm Emanuel, Democratic Leadership Conference Democrats, who are no more of a Democrat than I'm the Pope. So
exactly.
And I think that's the reason that the Kucinich has got to protect his back, because he's gone way too far into the idea of really defending and protecting the U.S. Constitution. And you don't do that in 2008 America. You don't protect and defend the Constitution. I don't care if you're a member of Congress or a member of the military or an average citizen. That's not what you're about. What you're about is something else, but not that. And if you do try to protect and defend the Constitution, the jackals will come after you and eat you down to your bones.
Absolutely. And Dennis has been forced into a situation where he's had to spend the money that everybody else would spend on advertising to actually try to get a fair shake. You know, he spent it's my understanding that he spent something like $25,000 in Nevada for court fees and lawyer fees and whatnot.
Right.
I mean, all I can say is, John Edwards, you're next.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're probably right.
You know, it's the whole thing. You know, if you don't speak up for the others, eventually it will be you.
Yeah, who said that? I think a preacher back in Germany in the 30s.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike, for taking my call.
Sure, Steve.
And good luck with the Scott Ritter's from our area here.
Oh yeah. I'm aware of that. I'm looking forward.
Yeah, and I wish I could come to Phoenix to see.
You could too. I've talked with Scott in an interviewee situation, but the gig in Phoenix would be the first time that he and I have really sat down and face to face. And like I said, it's going to be a blowout of the night. I don't look good in orange jumpsuits, and I don't think Scott does either. So probably both of us are going to come armed.
Yeah. Well, you know, I called in back in September because he was part of our event in Syracuse.
Yeah, I remember.
And even though he comes from a different side of the aisle, he certainly, like you said, it's hard to defend the Constitution in 2008. So.
Well, if Scott is still a Republican in the same way that I'm still a Democrat, he and I can get along just fine.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care, man.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Appreciate it. Yeah, Scott Ritter made no bones about it. He's a Republican, a conservative, captain in the Marine Corps, retired, UN weapons inspector, and I am a Democrat, captain in the radio business, not a UN weapons inspector. And I can do business with a Scott Ritter all day long, as I'm sure he can do business, so to speak, with me. We're not going to get to any more of the calls tonight. I do apologize. I see some familiar names up there on the board, but we are just flat out of time. I'll look for you tomorrow night. I got an email here on the subject line that says, I wasn't advocating violence, by the way. What is this? Oh, no, I'm nobody who, okay, thank you, Jeremy. I understand that. Nobody who calls this program, nor your humble and obedient servant behind the microphone, ever, ever, ever would advocate violence. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.